Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann here with Medical Monday. Along with shelter and clothing, food is essential to survival. Yet most of us take it for granted. Food is readily available, and thanks to the food industry, available in large quantities at very low cost. Yet in spite of food's generally wide availability, healthier foods such as produce are often more expensive due to shipping costs when they are out of season. Worse, so-called food deserts, urban areas where there are no grocery stores for more than a mile, are numerous in Tulsa and affect a significant number of us. My guest today, Katie Plohacki, is attuned to this problem and tries to solve it in numerous ways, from growing her own farm-fresh food, to harvesting food on other farms that might otherwise go to waste, and then actually providing healthy options in food deserts with a mobile grocery known as RNG Grocers, which makes more than 15 regular weekly stops. As I learned, RNG stands for Real Good Food, and you can learn more about Katie Plohacki at her organization's website, TulsaRealGoodFood.org. Named by the Tulsa World as one of 10 people to watch back in 2015, Katie Plohacki is also chair of the Tulsa Food Security Council when she's not running her food truck or catering. Katie Plohacki is my guest today for Medical Monday. Katie Plohacki, welcome to Studio Tulsa. I want to start really basic and just ask you, what is a food desert? For, many in our listening audience will know, but others won't, or they've heard the term but don't really understand it. And are there food deserts in Tulsa?
Yes, a food desert is actually a geographical area, and there are just as many rural food deserts as there are urban. A rural is typically 10 miles from a regular real grocery store, and urban is 1 mile, and that is because transportation plays a very important role in being able to get to groceries. So if you're more than a mile away from a grocery store, you are in a food desert.
And you study the issue and you advocate around the issue. So let's say Tulsa, for example, our listening area, how many food deserts are there?
We have about 83,000 people that live in food deserts in Tulsa. North Tulsa is a large one, which most people know about, but there are large swaths in West Tulsa and even in the middle of Tulsa where grocery stores have gone out, leaving people 3 or 4 miles from a grocery store.
Some of the history I know, but why do grocery stores not succeed? If there are people in need of food and nutrition, I mean, is it just a simple economic question of, dollars and cents, the stores can't turn a profit or?
Yeah, the margins are really small. It really started back in the 1950s as we had suburban sprawl. And the grocery stores followed the suburban sprawl and leaving people in areas of town, mostly downtown areas, where they were left without grocery stores and they had no means to move to the suburbs. So we kind of created these pockets of poverty and also pockets of areas with little or no services, not just grocery stores, but other services as well. And as the grocery stores got bigger and bigger and bigger, they put themselves further apart. And also the wholesale market, as the stores got bigger, the wholesale distributors got bigger, leaving small stores without access to wholesale distribution, which meant they weren't able to make any profits and they went out of business.
So so you mentioned 83,000 it was in the city proper.
City of Tulsa.
So that's out of about 400,000 people.
Yes.
So that's almost, very approximate math, a quarter of the population.
Yes.
Would you say? Okay, so you're clearly looking at this issue, advocating around it, and are very passionate about it. At what level, whether federal, state, or local levels, are there government agencies or nonprofit organizations beside yours, we'll come to that in a second, that are looking at food security or food deserts and trying to, solve this problem, as it were? It seems like a long-standing problem.
Yeah, the USDA has been looking at it for some time. And there's been a lot of programs over the last few years that have come about, including the Fresh Food Financing Initiative, which is there's a federal grant. It was started out of Pennsylvania. They've been working on the issue for about 20 years, and they did the program based on this program that they did in Pennsylvania that was hugely popular. They put in, about $165 million statewide, and they created over $2 million in new retail, over 5,000 new jobs. They tripled the return on investment. So that fund is available. However, you have to be a CDFI, a Certified Financial Institution, or a CDE, which is Certified Development Enterprise, to be able to go after some of these grants. But you see the Double Up Food Bucks that's now federal, which also that was started by Fair Food Network out of Detroit, which is now a federal grant that helps SNAP purchasers get free fruits and vegetables based on their purchases.
Okay, and just let's break that down a little bit. So SNAP is food benefits, right? So what we think of as classically as food stamps,
yes,
but they're not really stamps.
Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
And so when you talk about Double Up Food Bucks, I happen to know because my wife is a huge fan of, say, the Tulsa Farmers Market. So
yes.
People who shop at the Tulsa Farmers Market who have SNAP benefits can get double the value.
Yes.
So if they spend $10, they can get $20 worth of fresh produce.
Yes.
And thereby hopefully make it more affordable, but also eat healthier.
Yes. And we've been working with that program as well for the last 3 years.
So let's just now focus on you. And your organization is called Healthy Community Store Initiative, right, which you can find more information on at the website Tulsa Real Good Food. That's one word, TulsaRealGoodFood.org. And it's really kind of an umbrella of a number of different programs that you run. So I guess let's start with, when did you get into this line of work?
I'm going to say around 2008, we really started looking at the grocery store issue. I was working with Stephen Eberle, who was working with Food for Life program doing community gardens, Scott Smith, who had the Blue Jackalope just west of town, a little small store in a food desert. We started looking at this issue, and our first plan was to just open up small neighborhood markets in these neighborhoods. And we found out several barriers. One, banks won't finance you, especially a startup grocery store. Two, you can't access wholesale distribution, which is a problem. And three, healthy food produce is perishable, and will our client or our target market really purchase those products? So doing that, a light bulb went off and said, oh, we should open an ice cream truck. Instead of ice cream, we'll sell produce and take the food to the people. So that was really the first initial idea for the mobile grocery store, which was our first project. In doing that, we did a lot of research, created a lot of meetings. We put a business plan together. I pitched it to anyone who would possibly listen. And the Helmrich Foundation in 2010 gave us our first grant to get started. And so once we got that, it was go, go time. So it took us about a year to get the store up and running. We bought all the equipment. We did all of the work ourselves to save money. We learned how to weld and all kinds of other things. Put up reinforced fiberglass panels, which I don't like anymore. So we did all that work, and then we launched the program in January of 2014, actually running the store.
And the store is a mobile store, and it goes under the name RNG Family Grocers, and it's basically a mobile food truck, right?
Yes, it used to be a 9-horse horse trailer, and we turned it into a one-aisle grocery store with refrigeration, freezers, produce section, dry goods. We do carry some toilet paper, even a little bit of dog and cat food for some of our seniors. So we have over 700 products on the store, and we take it to 18 locations. We actually just started a new one at the Thornton YMCA. There's over 1,600 apartment units in that area that are low income.
This is the YMCA in Midtown near La Fortune.
It's yes,
becoming
exactly.
The Tandy Y.
It's becoming the Tandy Y,
right.
Yes.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. We're talking with Katie Plohacki of the Healthy Community Store Initiative. And Katie is telling us about RNG Family Grocers, the mobile grocery store. So you carry over 700 items on the food truck and go to 18 different locations. Is that on a set rotational basis so the people know when to expect you?
Yes. We have a schedule, a set schedule every week, so everyone knows where we will be. We run 6 days a week, typically 3 to 4 stops every day.
So I could see where you initially had the thought of, aha, let's open up small neighborhood markets in these food desert areas where, you know, bigger grocery stores are far away. You mentioned bank financing as being, but one of the major hurdles here, scalability is another problem. So there's only so many of you, I guess, Katie and your associates. So it would be very tough for you to sort of, you know, open up a chain of stores, if you will. But by having one store that's mobile that you can bring everywhere. So are you able to get that sort of wholesale pricing? No. Okay.
No. We source locally as possible. We actually started a farm 2 years ago so we could grow our own food. And we have a partner farm down in Leonard, which we help buy inputs, we harvest, we help plant, which brought us to our next program we started called Hands to Harvest. So we actually bought a 20-passenger transit bus, and we take groups of volunteers down to the farm. They get to learn to farm. We provide them breakfast in the field from what we're harvesting, and we use that produce not only for the store. Extra actually goes to the food bank. Over $6 billion of food never leaves the farm a year in the United States because it's either doesn't grade properly, it's ugly, they don't have pickers, or they don't have buyers. So we go out and we save 20,000 pounds of food last year, and we hope to triple that this year.
And that is agriculture recovery.
Yes.
What is, you have listed here on under Hands to Harvest, retail food rescue. Is that food that's gone past a perishable date and it's still edible or still?
No, it's mostly prepared foods, service industry, for catering, for example, we will go out and we make sure that any leftover food gets to people. We also do a lot of composting and livestock. Our vision here is to either feed people, livestock, or the soil. So we also pick up from Whole Foods every day of the week their green waste. We're working with TU, actually. We'll be meeting to see about rescuing all the food coming off the campus. And we're working with several other organizations as well. So if it's not edible for human consumption, it goes to livestock feed. And if it's not good enough for livestock feed, it goes to composting, and that compost gets donated back to community gardens.
So it seems like, I mean, this is, we've only started with two of, I think, six different programs. But it, are you open to people who want to volunteer with you, or who want to do this kind of work, or get their hands dirty, so to speak, working in the soil or working to collect food? Is that something of interest?
It is, absolutely. We just took 2 weeks ago some OU third residency doctors down. They wanted to volunteer, and they thought that it would be fun to get out of the ER. And they were really excited because they got to see the food being grown, and we got to really have good conversations about how preventative medicine really is good food, and how we can treat illness or treat people before they get ill by eating properly, and what that nutrition really means.
So if people want to find out more, they can go to your website,
yes,
TulsaRealGoodFood.org. So Hands to Harvest, I mean, so here you are, you've already come up with this really incredible idea of bringing food to food deserts. So you're providing nutrition, healthier options for people who are stuck in places where they have barriers to getting full access grocery stores or transportation. But then you found you needed to essentially kind of go and grow your own food. I mean, so talk about going upstream each step of the way. What are some of the other programs under the Healthy Community Store Initiative?
Well, our original thought was to put the mobile grocery store out of business, and that's still a model that we plan on doing. And how we want to do that is by helping people in these neighborhoods open their own grocery stores or neighborhood markets. I think the smaller neighborhood markets are more viable and sustainable. So we're actually working with a group up at 46th Street North Gibbs Shopping Center to open a community-owned grocery store. And we've also partnered with Humana. We'll be opening our first senior market inside a senior living facility where the seniors get to run the store, and they'll get food credit for the hours that they volunteer in self-sustaining their own selves through working on their own store. We'll go ahead and distribute and stock the store for them, but they'll actually run it themselves.
Would these cooperative neighborhoods, excuse me, would these community-owned neighborhood stores, would they be cooperatives? Is that the
yes,
model?
So, correct.
So essentially the people that work there would own, have
yes,
shares of ownership.
And as a community member, you also will have the ability to buy member shares. And it really will be an investment, investing in yourself. We really want to promote self-reliance. And any profits made from that store go back as patronage refunds at the end of the year. So it's truly an investment that they can get a return on.
Another program of the Healthy Community Store Initiative is the RNG Family Farm.
That's the farm that we started. Yeah.
Okay.
Our hopes is to turn it more into a teaching farm where we can actually bring kids out for field trips. But we have livestock. We have goats, chickens, pigs. We have an aquaponic system that we've just started. We have hoop houses, hugel culture. So we grow a lot of food and eggs and lots of stuff. So that helps support our store. It also helps support the catering because it is smaller. We don't get a lot of produce off that, so I use a lot of that for our catering. And then the 40-acre farm down in Leonard, A&D Shank Farms, he's been working with us for 3 years, and that's where most of our produce comes from.
So is aquaponics the same thing as hydroponics?
It is different. Aquaponics contains fish. It's a kind of a closed loop. The fish do their duty and gets the water dirty, and the plants use that fertilizer to grow, and it cleans the water, which then goes back into the fish.
Now, Cooking for Health, is that the program under your umbrella that is part of, you offer, you mentioned catering.
Yes.
Is that the same thing, or that's more teaching?
It's under the Cooking for Health. We have a commercial kitchen, so we do a lot of community outreach. We do cooking demonstrations. We go to a lot of events. We actually use food that's not on the store that may not have sold it. You know, gets a little blemish or something. We don't want to throw that away. We create prepared meals for our seniors. A lot of the seniors have dexterity problems. They're not able to cut a cabbage or a an onion. They're maybe unable to cook for themselves healthy, so they rely on a lot of frozen or boxed foods, which is not good for them. So we take that food that we recover from the Hands to Harvest program or from RNG Family Grocers, and we turn those into prepared meals and sell those healthy meals to the seniors. And then we use all that food for events such as our Veggie Bucks for Kids program, where we actually go into schools and we teach them a little bit about farm to school, and they get to see the plants, they get to see the produce, they get to taste the produce, and then they get to come out on the store with a $5 coupon and get free, they get to shop for their own produce.
What does RNG Family Grocer stand for? Who are RNG?
RNG stands for real good. So we want to make sure that we're serving real and good food.
And so, I mean, I guess it doesn't take a huge leap of imagination to understand why in communities that are classified as food deserts, and you talked about how difficult it was to even get financing, let alone supply a small neighborhood grocery. I think of 7-Eleven or fast food, of course, the McDonald's or the Burger Kings of the world. I mean, because they have, their own distribution network and essentially a corporate parent, it's easier in a sense for them to extend into the neighborhoods, and of course through their sort of strong-armed supply chain work, are able to keep prices very low. So those types of foods, unfortunately, are very attractive to people who are on the go or who don't necessarily have access to the full range of shopping or haven't learned the skill of cooking or food selection or things like that. Do you find a lot of what you're doing is having to be an educator as well as, providing this type of food?
Yeah, education is very important. We have a program that we're getting ready to launch. We have a couple of pilots in place because convenience stores are located everywhere in food deserts. And we've talked to a lot of those convenience store owners. Again, distribution is a problem. They don't have access to healthy food. They have access to convenience store distribution. So we have two convenience stores that are willing to let us come in and put refrigeration in, and we'll actually supply the fresh fruits and vegetables Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And it's kind of like a consignment plan. They feel that it's very risky, and so that's another reason that they don't want to buy produce or sell produce because of the perishability, where they will only have to pay for what they sell. So it kind of reduces that risk. It gives them a way to bring it into the store and see how well it works. I think it'll work really, really well. I think if people have consistent, affordable, quality access to produce on a daily basis, they will go into these convenience stores and start shopping more. And our hopes are that they will really transform more into a healthy corner store versus a traditional convenience store.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Katie Plohacki, who's the founder of the Healthy Community Store Initiative. And Katie, just hearing about the programs that you run, that you pilot, that you have created over the last several years, I guess one wonders, first of all, when do you sleep? And two, what got you interested in food security as an issue to really essentially devote your life to?
I do sleep. A lot of these experiments and these pilots that we're doing, I really believe in economic opportunity, equitable economic opportunity. And we're hoping that some of these programs will be able to be spun off and people can take them and create their own businesses for profit out of them. I got interested, I guess, because, I grew up on a farm in a very small town with a single mom, and we didn't always have a lot of food or a lot of money. I experienced that as well with my three young daughters. Worked two jobs, minimum wage. You prioritize your spending, and what was important is to make sure you had a roof over your head, you had transportation to continue getting to your job. Sometimes, I rode the bus, didn't have a job. And food really was a luxury. It was your disposable income. It was flexible. You always had a choice on dollar. How are you going to spend that dollar? And I've been where, you buy that one hamburger at a fast food joint, and you split it between your whole family. Each gets a few bites. So having experienced that throughout my life, when I came here to Tulsa and started doing some advocacy work, specifically in North Tulsa around economic development, because I still am a real estate broker, but real estate and specifically commercial has always been a passion of mine in business, that I saw these health disparities, and it just struck me in my heart. And when I saw people, I'm not from here. My first, I'd tell people where I was hanging out in North Tulsa, and people would make comments, and I said, I didn't understand. I'm from Detroit. It looks like a really good neighborhood to me. I didn't see visually what other people were talking about. And I decided that that's what I wanted to do and where I wanted to live. That's where we live. That's where our farm is. And I got deeper and deeper into it. And
I'm very intrigued by the idea that you were a real estate broker, and then that led you to make these observations about health disparities. That's not probably the most logical leap necessarily.
No, I think, well, the first project I worked on was the shops on Peoria, and I put that business plan together, and we brought an advisory group together, our committee, our retail committee. And with my real estate background, we did site selection. I got to teach them how you look at placement of retail operations, because it's also a retail desert in that area. And so we built the shops on Peoria and put 10 new businesses in that shopping center through education and training and business planning and holding their hands. And so after I got done with that project, we had been working on the Healthy Community Store Initiative project, and so we jumped full board into that once the shops were built.
But so is this your full-time avocation now?
It is, yes.
And so, I mean, you mentioned, I mean, not only just the creative work and the literally like getting your hands dirty aspect of it, I mean, the farming itself, the food recovery, the going around town collecting food that's going to be discarded essentially, but not only that, the fundraising, the business planning, the organizational structure, so there's an administrative component to it. How are you able to balance those competing, they're synergistic activities, but I mean, how much of your time you'd probably rather be spending it, you know, cooking essentially, or using the food or make new recipes, and yet I imagine you have to do some balance of, you know, keeping the store open, so to speak.
Yeah, there's a lot of day to day. I work probably 100 to 120 hours a week. You know, the big picture, and there's a lot of big picture. Each time we run up against a barrier, it's like, well, we can fix that. That shouldn't be a barrier. There should be a solution to that. And, you know, we start looking at ideas and kind of put them on the back burner. I like to create business plans for all of my ideas, so they're kind of shovel ready. And I talk about them a lot, like they're real, because I do believe they are real. They just haven't been implemented yet. And they get moved to the front burner when we find a synergy or a partner or a collaborator that's working on something similar. And it's like, here's a business plan. Let's make this happen. And most of what we do, we have a lot of partners. I mean, we couldn't do what we do without all of our partners in TU and OSU and OU and Educare and Tulsa Community College and the Food Bank and on and on and on and on. We don't want to overlap. We want to help fill in the gaps. So we like to partner with other people in order to fill in a gap that they may be missing with one of our programs. So the big pictures, you know, always come. They keep coming. Because there's all of these issues are integrated. It's not just healthy access. It's access to jobs. It's access to housing. It's access to transportation. I mean, our built environment is super important to the health of our community. It's not just food. It's both sides. It's healthy eating and active living. So I'm very interested in how to integrate all of these things, because I think we can't look at each problem as a silo. We have to figure out how can we integrate each problem, because that's the only way we're going to be able to fix them.
I mean, have you heard about the upstream effect or a physician by the name Rishi Manchanda, who's written a TED book, a book about it called The Upstream Doctors. And so the idea being that as we train health practitioners for the 21st century, we need to continue to focus certainly on treating disease, but that so much of disease and illness is caused by these upstream factors. So much of them are, you know, related to early child education, having safe, you know, environment to live in a neighborhood, but also nutrition and activity, a huge part of that. And so, you know, I think of food security as sort of a major medical issue, and it's something we essentially completely overlook. And we've talked on this program with other folks who view, you know, nutrition as health or nutrition as the best medicine. And so increasingly, I think, you know, medical students, to name one, but certainly nursing students and physician assistant and other allied health professionals, there's a much increasing recognition of this as an important issue. I mean, you mentioned that you had some residents from OU, for example, who came down to the farm. Was this something that was novel for them, or they had been seeking out, or?
Well, we have one of the physicians actually volunteers with us every Saturday, and he kind of went to his colleagues and said, hey, you should volunteer with these guys. And so he came to me, what type of opportunities are there? And I said, well, we have this new Hands to Harvest program, and would they like to go to the farm? And they said, yeah, that sounds great. And while we were down there, they said, you know, this should really be part of our curriculum in learning, because there's so much, you know, we really focus on a lot of medicine and, you know, diseases after they've already been acquired by the body that, you know, we don't really get a lot, maybe a week's worth of attention on nutrition a year, but we don't really get to understand how that food connects with our body. And it does. We have several clients, customers that have come to us and said they've been taken off medications for their high blood pressure, for their cholesterol medicine, because they've been eating more fruits and vegetables. So I know that it helps. But again, the physical side too, you got to get up and you have to move. As well as eat well. But, you know, there's a lot of barriers to people. It's not just education. I think a lot of people know what they're supposed to be eating. It's I don't have access, or I don't know how to preserve the food. You know, what temperature do I store my lettuce at? How do I cook with these things? We have a lot of, you know, because we're a farm, we have kohlrabi, we have eggplants, we have some different vegetables you don't always find in the grocery store, and people will ask us, well, what is that? And we'll say, here, take one home and try it. Here's a very simple way to prepare it. Come back and tell me about it next week. We had a woman come back. We gave her some patty pan squash. She came back and said she'd made it 5 different ways and was so excited she never knew she knew liked squash. It's all about exposing people to new things. And I think, especially when you're talking about people who are food insecure, they're not going to try new things if they don't know they like it, because their food dollars are so small, they're not going to risk spending that little bit of money on something they might not like. So we want to encourage them to try something new. We have recipe cards we give people, we do tastings, and we give stuff away so they can go try it and get excited.
So Katie, if you could change one thing about, say, the treatment of hunger in our communities, what would it be?
You know, my answer is probably going to be different. I thought about that question. And really, the treatment, when I thought of the treatment of hunger, it's dignity. We need to treat people with more dignity. Being hungry, not being able to feed your kids, that's embarrassing. It's humiliating. You know, we hear the word entitlement a lot, but I think that's just to cover up a defense mechanism. Because not being able to pick out your own food, waiting in pantry lines, quality of food or the meals you receive, loss of independence, stereotyping. Poor people don't like produce. Yes, they do. All of those things are indignant. You know, we're taking the dignity away from people. On our store, food is, you know, our number one goal, to make sure they have access to healthy food. But our number one goal is customer service. Every single person that walks through the door, we're going to treat them like they're the most important person in the world, like they're the president of the United States. And we care about them, because we do. And that their life really matters. And I see the looks on their faces and the comments they make to us and the love letters that they send us, to how much they really appreciate being treated with dignity. They get to pick out their own food. They have a say. They get to walk into the store, somebody who may be in a wheelchair that can't get to the store. So we need to understand that, you know, quality of food is important. You know, we so many times, you know, there's a food drive. We go to our cupboards. We pick out the stuff that we know we're never going to eat because it's been in the cupboard for 3 years, and that's what we donate. If we wouldn't eat it, why would we expect somebody else to eat it? Dignity. Everyone needs equitable access to real good food.
Katie Plahacki is the founder of the Healthy Community Store Initiative, and you can learn more about it at her website, www.TulsaRealGoodFood.org. And Katie, if people are interested in seeing RNG Family Grocers, they can find a schedule of a weekly location stops on the website?
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Well, that's our show for today. Studio Tulsa Medical Monday is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. Next week on Medical Monday, we'll talk with Jacqueline Cosgrove, health reporter from The Oklahoman, and her series on mental health in Oklahoma. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.